Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Allison in Wonderland Mental Health Podcast. I'm so excited to have you all here. And can you believe that we're already in April? This has been a really wild ride since January. And for April, we have Autism Awareness Month. And I know as a parent, I was always very stressed out about the mental health issues that were in my family and things that were hereditary. And I never really knew how to track those for my children, or even how to communicate with their doctor about things as they grew up. So luckily technology has evolved and really awareness of these things has evolved. So it is Autism Awareness Month. That is not the only mental health issue that we need to keep an eye out for with our children. And I have some experts on today. And as usual, I will let them introduce themselves so you can get to know them in their own words. Welcome to Allison in Wonderland.
Hello, everyone. Thank you.
So, Alison, thank you so much for having us in the podcast today. I am Dr. Jigisha Chaudhary, and my team, Anna Rodriguez, we work very closely together for the exact purpose that you mentioned. It's you know, the mental health awareness is extremely important in our communities. Just a little bit background about myself. I'm a pediatrician. And I have been in practice for a long time now, 18 years to be exact, in the Central Jersey area. And in the general practice that I've been in, I've noticed that the concerns in children with regards to developmental delay, mental health, behavioral concerns, they all have been increasing to a great extent. That has led us to kind of focus more on this aspect of the child's growth. And for that purpose, we have something that helps for the awareness that we can talk about.
Awesome. Thank you so much. And we also have Anna here.
Anna, hello, everyone.
So I know you're part of the team. Do you have anything specific that makes you really passionate about mental health that you'd like to share?
First of all, thank you, Allison, for having us here. I'm very excited to be here on this podcast, and especially with somebody that's so passionate about mental health and in children and just in general mental health, that it's so important. My name is Anna Rodriguez. I was born in Peru. I immigrated to the United States at a very young age, where I pursue my associates in social work, and I currently am in the process of continuing my career. So at a very young age, I already knew what I wanted to do. There is a lack of knowledge in many Latin communities, especially when it comes to mental health and learning disabilities. And just meeting Dr. Chaudhary has been a blessing, because I feel like she has a specific goal, which is children. And that's also my goal, to help children and families. So just being here is just a dream come true to me. It's just something that I always wanted to do, just help children, just really understand, families really understand mental health and how important it is, how important, and if we detect it now, and we detect these mental health issues and also learning disabilities, then we can grow into better adults, I believe, instead of maybe we have all of these things that we go through. Me as an adult, I'm 26, and there are so many things that I struggle with that I wish I knew at a very young age, or my dad or my mom had the resources, you know, or the knowledge that I do have now. And so I'm just very excited to be here. I'm very passionate about mental health in general, and just helping out my community and helping many children. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's amazing. And I think you also brought up an important topic, that where different cultures have different understandings of mental health, and also different stigmas surrounding it based on culture, race, religion. There are all of these differences that, you know, the three of us all come from, you know, different cultural backgrounds and different educational backgrounds. And still, you can see that there's a passion that we all share for mental health in children, which means there's obviously this, you know, worldwide need for better understanding of mental health in children. So I did mention Autism Awareness Month, and I think that maybe autism and ADD are the two things that people think of when they think of mental health in children. But that's obviously not the only thing. Dr. Chaudhary, do you want to kind of tell us, you know, when you think of mental health in children, what those things out, you know, we talk about a lot of things that are outside of the box of what we normally think of. as far as mental health on Alice in Wonderland. So what are those other topics that maybe people aren't thinking about as much?
Yeah, so Allison, first of all, this is a global concern. It's not just in the United States or the progressive countries. In fact, it's a problem worldwide. You know, right now the stats show that one in every six children have mental health concerns such as anxiety, depression, and PTSD, which is found from the age group 6 years to 17 years of age, which is one in every six child having a mental health concern. But if we talk about in general, other issues, as you mentioned, autism, CDC just came out with this data recently, which was this week, that autism is now one in every 36 child. Okay. And when I say children is, I would say autism, we want to pick it up as early as 12 months or 15 months of age. And of course, when we consider children, it's up to 21 years. But all of that, the population included, autism is one in every 36. So apart from autism and other mental health concerns that I mentioned, which is the anxiety, depression, and PTSD being among the most common, the major chunk of other concerns are the ADD and the ADHD, which is also very, very prevalent in our communities everywhere. And it's not related to any cultural association. It's everywhere that is seen. Apart from that, there is learning disability. Anna was mentioning about post-COVID that went up to 15%. So it used to be about 7, 8%. And now post-COVID, we have seen that number as 15%. Apart from that, there is also just isolated behavioral issues, you know. It could be like anger concerns, ODD, that is oppositional defiant disorder, OCDs, which is obsessive compulsive disorders. All of these are also very common in children, and isolated speech concerns. So all of this actually I would say brings up to an incidence of like 23 to 24% in the entire population of children. So that's how common it is.
Wow, that's so much. And I think also, I never realized that autism could be detected in children as early as 12 to 15 months. And I know that my children are grown, so my youngest is 19, and the resources were really not available when I was raising babies. And even just the internet was not, you know, as robust as it is now. And so I think that a lot of times it would be when children started school that you would find out that there may be any kind of developmental delay. And so you're talking about 4 years old if they're in pre-K, five if they start in kindergarten. So that's really a really big change in age from what I think you're saying, you know, from a year, you can detect things. And that's a big gap of not having that early detection.
Yes. So in fact, autism can be diagnosed and picked up even earlier than 12 months. What was happening before is that, we didn't have much understanding of autism. There wasn't much awareness amongst parents and even doctors too, especially if they belong to certain areas like rural communities where there's not much resources. It was difficult to pick it up earlier. So usually when the kids started going to school, the teachers would be the ones who would be bringing, you know, to everyone's attention that, look, this child is definitely not able to fit in, in the environment. They're not communicating. They don't have any eye contact. Usually all of this, parents sometimes with lack of awareness, they would kind of ignore to some extent, because they would, again, maybe compare it to somebody else in the family that may have spoken late. And the most common answer would be, oh, you know, so-and-so person in the family spoke late, so I'm just going to wait on it. And then similarly with the doctors too, being so busy with seeing sick visits with the children, or, you know, worried about vaccinations and other concerns, that the minor developmental and behavioral concerns were missed out. But because there's so much of like a conversation, you know, around this topic, and the awareness is spreading, that's also one of the reasons that that we are able to pick it up early as 12 to 15 months, and that happens when the child is not achieving certain skill sets, what they should be according to their age level, that the milestone should be reached.
Yeah, that's, and it's really interesting that you mentioned people comparing, you know, how one child that they see, you know, learning compared to another one. I know with my oldest, we were at the pediatrician's when he was maybe 3 years old, and we were like, does he have a speech impediment? And the doctor said he's just so smart that the words that he's trying to say don't match, you know, what he can pronounce. And so we just took that as the answer. And it was not until both of my kids were in school that we were then told they both needed speech therapy, because we were like, oh, that's how it is. And then the youngest, you know, mimicked so much because they learned so much from each other that we took that answer, you know, and you're talking about an answer that we received 20 years ago. So things were very different, but then they both did go through speech therapy with the school, because once again, like we were like, hey, is this an issue? And he really was very smart and used a very large vocabulary. But then we did not question it again after that. And so it's really interesting. If we had known to track the development after that, well, at what point is it that he's old enough to pronounce these words? And then that kind of leads back to the importance of early detection. And we can't just, you know, kind of rely on the schools to detect these things. We need to be tracking it before then.
Absolutely. And what makes it more difficult is because all of these conditions, they have overlapping signs and symptoms and concerns. So as you mentioned, if a child is not speaking, it could be, okay, does this child, is this child extremely shy, or, you know, does this child have low self-esteem, or is it just a problem with the speech muscles that they're not able to kind of pronounce certain words? So there could be like various things that could be happening. And for that purpose, the ideal thing would be if parent has sort of like a guide towards, you know, knowing that, okay, my child is now 6 months old. I want to make sure my child is, you know, growing as per typical children and achieving all the skills and the milestones. We're not out there to kind of diagnose the child right away, but the goal is to pick up those concerns early. And it could be belonging to either, you know, autism spectrum or it could be something else. But as long as we identify the concern and we start giving help to that child to help them with that particular concern, then it may even, you know, go back to the way a typical child would be in terms of their growth. And that is what the goal is. You know, and I think parents play a very important role in that sense.
Yeah, absolutely. And so would you say that, you know, these mental health issues like anxiety, depression, and PTSD in children, do you think that some of those are compounded by the issue of a learning disability not being early detected?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. In fact, anxiety and PTSD are like the two biggest precursors for having a mental health illness. So, you know, like a lot of the times we're not able to exactly pinpoint a cause to mental health, but yes, there are identified risk factors, such as having any sort of like a negative experience, either at home or in school, or even like online or social media, you know, such as bullying or even violence, you know. So like any of that can kind of have an impact on the child while they're growing up. And at the same time, if they have low self-esteem, because they have a learning disability, as you were just mentioned, or they have a low self-esteem because the kids know they're different from other people, from other children, because they don't have the medium of like communication or having that sort of social surrounding, all of that can compound to being, you know, major issues. So if you're not able to identify these concerns early on, for sure the child has a very, very high risk of having mental health concerns such as depression.
Oh, and so, I mean, that's it says so much too, because you never think about a six-year-old having anxiety or depression. And that, I mean, I deal with anxiety and PTSD and ADD and all these things. And it's difficult as a 40-year-old. Like, it's difficult to deal with those things. And it's even difficult. It's taken me a long time to be able to be self-aware enough to explain what I'm feeling in the moment. And mm-hmm. and that's been a very long journey. I can't imagine trying to explain those things as a 6-year-old and trying to communicate them. Mm-hmm. And maybe it just comes across as a behavior issue, not a mental health issue, not a learning issue, but as a behavior issue. And then children are being punished. And then it just kind of becomes even more of a stressor. And that's just, it's really terrible when you think about it. But, you know, yeah. Luckily, like we're becoming more aware as a society. And I think, you know, worldwide and, hopefully we'll continue to become more aware as we go forward. We'll have, you know, people that are more tech savvy that know to go look for these resources and try to help with development. So hopefully it will get better as we go forward. And it sounds like both of you are working really hard to make that happen.
Yeah, and definitely something that is really important to mention is that, like you were saying, Allison, it's hard to talk about it as an adult, but especially it's harder as a child because sometimes in the household, parents don't really believe in mental health. They just think it's not real, right? And or not even not real, but it's a taboo to talk about mental health, especially like, you know, like I said, like I mentioned, in my case, there is not such a thing as anxiety until I mentioned it and I actually was able to know that what I was feeling was anxiety. So imagine not having the space to talk about it at home. So that's why it's important to not only raise awareness, but to tell parents, hey, it's important to have that space to tell your child when they come back from school, how did you feel? Not only just, how are you? And school was good? Yes, it was good. Okay. And we don't talk about it. No. Did you have a hard time learning? What did you learn about? Was it hard or how did you feel? You know, because children that are having learning differences or learning disabilities, they start comparing themselves to other children and they just start thinking, well, I'm just dumb. I can't do this. I'm not smart enough, you know, to actually do this math problem or to read. And so it's really hard to know that they're struggling with all of this, but on top of that, going home and not having a safe space to talk about how they're feeling, if they're feeling sad about it, if they're feeling anxious, if they don't feel like they're good enough. And so they grow up with this, having this type of environment, and not because parents are trying to maybe like not validate what they're feeling, but also because it's just not normal in the house to maybe talk about it. So it's important for parents to be aware that, hey, you guys have to build the space for children to talk about these issues without judging, because sometimes they feel like they will be judged without saying, you know, it's just in my case, my mom would say, no, you're just not busy enough. Let's just do this. Let's work on this. You're not depressed. What are you talking about being depressed? There's so many things, you know, that you have. How can you say you're depressed? You have everything, but it's more than that. And it's deeper than that. So it's definitely something that we have to remember to have a space for children to talk about how they're feeling.
Yeah. And it seems almost not just for the child to feel like they don't have a space, but also to kind of reduce the stigma for the parents where they don't feel like they're a failure in some part. If your child has low self-esteem, that doesn't mean you failed as a parent, because I think that there's this stigma where it's if your child is struggling, it's a direct reflection of you and your parenting. And I think kind of eliminating that stigma would allow them to feel more open and safe with letting the child feel open to talk about those things without feeling ashamed of, you know, the struggles that their child are maybe going through.
Yeah. I mean, it's more like a movement, you know, it's like a movement that podcast, like what you're doing helps to create, you know, the awareness app that we have that tries to create where everybody gets involved, specifically parents, and they have support groups as well. So they're more accepting, you know, to all of these. And not to forget the incidence rate that I said, that it is actually 1 in every 6 child that has mental health, which, and I'm only just talking about anxiety, depression, and PTSD. These three make up for that one in six child starting anywhere between from 6 to 17 years of age, which is such a high number. So we are seeing this in almost every household, if you think of it. If it's not immediate family, it's extended, but for friends, somebody's always heard of some child having concerns.
Right. And if autism is one in every 36, I mean, 36 is probably the average class size in America, at least. So you're talking about one child for every classroom. And so, I mean, it's obviously not a reflection on the parent. It's part of what's going on in the world right now. Anna, I'm curious, as far as your personal experience, do you think that with a child coming in, immigrating to the States, not having English as a first language, do you think that that makes it even more of a struggle for the child, for the parents to communicate, and things like that? And it then making it harder for that early, sorry, I'm losing my words, the early detection.
Definitely. I mean, first of all, we didn't have the resources in our country. And then coming here, pretty much in my case, my parents just came here to work and give us a better future. They were not concerned about, they just thought that, well, we're giving them everything. They have everything. So they should be, not only grateful because we are, my sister and I, but they should be okay. We're providing for them, They didn't have all this knowledge that I have now. Even for me, just learning about this when I was going to school, learning from this when I started talking to Dr. Chowdhury about all of these concerns, this is the first time I had heard about all of these concerns. So for me, it was something to imagine for my parents. So definitely it was really hard immigrating to another country and then having to speak the language. Thankfully, my parents planned ahead, and so and back then, Peru, I actually started learning English, so that I knew at some point I was gonna come here and go to school here. But I dealt with a lot of bullying. I felt not good enough. These are things I never talked about, ever. Not even with my sister, which I have more. That I talked to her about everything. I never talked about it, and I didn't feel like it was important. It wasn't important to talk about because my parents had been going through so much already, coming here, having to work. So I felt like I was going to be, one, a failure to them. And then second, something else that they had to carry with. Well, we brought them here so they can have a better future, but now they're struggling here, So it was definitely hard on my mental health, on everything. It was an extra, it was a plus. And if I did have any mental health problems when I came from Peru, here it was like double because I was struggling with all of this. It was, everything was new. And then again, 2012, 2011, nobody really talked about mental health. I talked about mental health when I started struggling with mental health, with anxiety. And that's when I knew what anxiety was and how important it is to sort of know about it and how to deal with it and what resources and what can I do to better my mental health. It was definitely hard for me. And I feel like for many children that immigrate to a new country from anywhere.
Yeah. And I think that as a parent, it's like every decision you make as a parent, you can see the good benefits, but then there's always going to be the cost. Yeah. So, we moved around a lot as my husband progressed in his career. So my children changed schools a lot when they were younger. And, we were definitely, moving them to better schools and we were able to give them more, but they weren't kids that got to grow up in the same school their whole lives. They grew up in multiple schools. So there was always that concern where it was like, are they going to make friends? Are the teachers going to like them at this school? And so, you're doing something that's good for them, but there's also always those negative ramifications that are going to come with it, with anything that you do, which is stressful for the parent and stressful for the child. But I think that what's really great that Dr. Chowdhury is creating here is that, It's funny. I always say there's an app for that. Well, now there is an app to track this, and it's not only in English. And that kind of ties back into, well, okay, so maybe your child speaks English, but you haven't learned English. So you can use this app in multiple languages. So I would like to hear a little bit about how the Jaguar app actually can help track development. And then also kind of what languages does that, you know, include? Because I think that that's a really important part of this puzzle, because there are, I mean, this is a worldwide thing. This is, and even if you're not looking worldwide and you're just looking at America, America's a melting pot. We don't all speak English. Think about how many people speak Spanish, and I don't speak Spanish. So like I should, like it's one of those things because of the large population that does. So I think that that's a unique part of this as well.
No, absolutely. And so that was exactly the purpose. So where my practice is in Central Jersey, we get a lot of different culture background communities. We have Spanish communities, we have Creole, we have a lot of different, like Indian languages. The most common ones are Gujarati, Marathi, Hindi, Punjabi, and then there's a South Indian most common language, which is Telugu. So we have all of these languages. Creole is something we are working on. We are also working on Mandarin. So we are trying to incorporate more and more languages to the app. In terms of who can use it, it's basically all parents, because there's such a high incidence of all of these concerns, which is kind of covers like the entire umbrella of concerns in children. We want to make sure that the parent is keeping track of their kids right from the beginning, which is at the newborn phase. So as soon as the baby is born, you know, you want to create register in the app, create a profile, and then start using the questionnaires. Now, the way we have in the app, we try to make it as easy as possible for the parent, because we don't expect parents to go through the medical schooling of, you know, this 8-10 years to know what's going on with their child, but this is more of a screening. So to make it easy, we want to kind of just help out the parent that based on their child's profile that they've created, they just are given the questionnaire that, okay, this belongs to the questionnaire that you could fill out for your child based on the age group. And this is exactly what you need to do, you know, in stepwise 1, 2, and 3. And once you fill it out, you get a conclusion of saying that what could the concerns might be. It gives you like suggestions what you can do. It will give them the activities they can do for those concerns that are there in their child in forms of like simple videos or GIFs, as you call it. So it's very easy for them to understand. And it also tells them that, you know, that potentially who are the different specialists they may need to take their child to. So it kind of gives them an entire understanding of what's happening with their child and in different languages.
Yeah, and I think that a really important part that you said there is that it gives them the list of the different types of doctors they may want to take their child to. So this isn't a replacement for healthcare, but it's a tool to kind of help you communicate with the doctor what's going on. I know a lot of times, just for me personally, I have migraines and I'll go to the neurologist and I will forget everything that I needed to tell the doctor about what my headaches had been in that, you know, since the last time I saw the doctor. So just trying to think of when I was a young parent, remembering what happened from one day to the next before taking, you know, for a checkup for my kid with the pediatrician, it's a lot. So it sounds like this really empowers the parent to have those, you know, knowledgeable conversations. And also if you're there with a child and or multiple children in a doctor's office, it's very hard to sit and remember what to talk about, but you've got all of it in this centralized place. And you can just be like, here, this is what information I've tracked since I've seen you last.
Yes. I mean, especially because I can speak from the experience of being in the doctor's clinic, because I'm the other end of it where I see these kids. So in fact, the app, of course, it has helped parents a lot, but it has been a really like a complementary tool towards the services that we're giving to the parents as physicians, because then it makes me decide how I want to focus on my 10 minutes visit with the child. yes, in those 10 minutes, I have to give the vaccines. I need to make sure that all organ systems are working fine. But at the same time, I'm able to identify those concerns kind of focus my conversation towards that. Otherwise, they could be easily missed out. So it has really been a great tool for our clinic. And in fact, during the COVID times when we were not seeing the children in person, it helped us a lot. And that was one of the reasons we decided that this is a free application that should be made available for everybody to use.
And on top of that, I believe it's not only just great for doing the screening tools, but also we have developmental activities they can do. So while they wait for a diagnosis from the specialist, they can work on these activities instead of just waiting to see, because there's a long wait for them to see a specialist, especially if they're struggling with autism, and they have developmental activities that enhance the child's development in areas of concern, you know, sensory, feeding, cognitive, attention, focusing, coordination. So there are over 1,000 activities that they can do there, and they give them the goal, the activity for the day, a checklist, and they can do this not only, and something that we were talking about with Dr. Chowdhury, and something we mentioned to the parents is that this tool is Doer is not just a great tool for, it's a great tool for all families, for all children who are typical and neurodivergent. So it's not just you use it because you're struggling or there's a problem or there's an issue. You use it since you have a baby. You can start tracking your baby's milestones. Since you have a baby, you can start using Doer. And on top of that, it's free. So imagine having all those resources in just one app, you know? So it's just, it's amazing.
Yeah, that's great. I definitely, I wish there were things like that. I always joke and say that it ages me, but when I first, became a mom, the cell phones didn't even take pictures at that point. cameras were only kind of digital. I actually had a film camera when I had my first child and had to get everything, all of the pictures developed and I have boxes of them that need to be scanned in. So I think it's great that now, there's an app for that. I think that's so amazing. And I use a similar one for my headache tracker. I track my headaches so that, and it's similar to if you think about people that are using an Apple Watch or a Fitbit to track their steps. It's just like how they track their personal, fitness and wellness goals. Then they can also track their child's, development. And I think that it's really amazing. And I think that, it is important what you said about, it's not just for people that are neurodivergent. It's for all children because, tracking development is a great thing to do because then when somebody comes back and it's like, oh, when did your child first speak? And what was, how many words did they say at this age? You've got all that information. I was trying to remember, to write it in a baby book. And I can tell you it's like the first month is pretty filled out. And after that, it's not much.
The good thing about that was that you were able to probably put pictures and decorate it.
Yes.
You don't need to remember anything because whatever questionnaire you filled out, it gets saved in the past questionnaire. So if you want to just know, hey, I don't know when my baby started rolling over, you can always check back in the app and look at your past questionnaire to know exactly what your baby did. So I think I think nobody has to remember anything now. Let's just focus on things that are needed, like spending the right way, the time in a very right manner with your child to get the most out of it, to get the most bonding out of it, to kind of see your child is being challenged by the activities that you're doing with them. So I think these are the things that we need to really focus on and help them.
Yeah,
that's, it's such a great concept. And I'm so glad when I see that things in mental health are getting better, but then I'm also like, man, why could I not have that? Like I look back and I'm just kind of jealous that the tools weren't there. But it's so great that one, it's free for people to use and they can, you know, give the data to their doctor. They can keep it for themselves. They can, you know, have this as a great tool. I think that it's a very natural thing for us to pick up our phones in the day and track things, and just like you're checking messages. And so I think that that's, you know, it makes it very accessible to parents. And I think that's really amazing. It's really great what y'all are both doing. I absolutely love it. I'm totally jealous of parents that get this tool now when they're raising their babies.
Whatever we can do to help the communities, there is a big need for sure.
Yeah, there is.
We're doing our part. All of us are.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's really great. I think it's interesting that the statistics on the concerns being, you know, so much higher after COVID. I think also, you know, it's when people don't think about, you know, children having issues in school and COVID, imagine the children that started school during COVID. Mm-hmm. So kindergarten, first grade was in lockdown. I mean, it's a completely different, you know, stance. Mental health issues in general have went up significantly, because if you think about people that are in toxic relationships, we're trapped in the home with them. You know, signs of abuse are usually reported by teachers, and those things weren't reported by teachers during COVID. So it's definitely one of those things where I think a lot of people are like, well, we're past it. But at the same time, we don't know no one expected this to happen in the world. So we have no idea what's going to happen next. So having these tools to be prepared and just have them for every step that your child goes through, I think that's really amazing. And I can only imagine as technology develops, there'll just be more and more built into the app for people as they go on.
Yes, you're absolutely right. And I just wanted to add that, you know, apart from tracking and while they're waiting to be connected to the resources, parents should kind of just, you know, consider that when they spend time with their kids, they want to make sure that they're doing something for fun, not just for academics, but let's say, you know, identify things that your child really enjoys, such as maybe music or art or something that they could focus on doing that. Always try to have a little break from social media and other internet, you know, online, that time that they're spending, because that helps. And exercise, that is like the biggest factor to reduce stress. In fact, it helps to channelize energies. So while we are talking about what helps the parents, you know, to kind of keep track that of their children, to make sure they are having these good habits. And because that is going to stick with them, and which definitely helps, you know, to kind of in the treatment of mental health illnesses.
Yeah. I mean, it's really important. And I think that's a really important thing to note. We're talking about how to track development, but we're not like, oh, this is the only way you should interact with your child. still have playtime and, you know, outside time and all of these things. So, that's still a very important part for the child's development, for your relationship, for both of your development. I mean,
yeah, and everything. And especially, and I'm sorry to cut you off, Allison, but fine. What tying back to what you asked me in the beginning, coming back to coming to a new country, everybody works here. The way of life here is very fast. And so sometimes maybe parents don't have the time to really go and spend time with their children. But how important it is to spend time with them, to, you know, have little dates, you know, with them and really play with them and get to know them. I think that because there's a lack of maybe time to kind of just, you know, we can get so caught up in work and doing so many things and work and just, you know, living day by day. Like, I feel like yesterday was Monday and we're already like, what, tomorrow is Friday already?
Yes, I know.
So I feel like that's how, you know, and some parents even work weekends. So yeah, it's important just to go outside. Now the spring is coming. That's also something that I wanted to mention. From ages 5 and 6, I believe there's the activity separated each by season. So we have winter season, we have summer season, spring season. So maybe these are things and activities that they might be doing even in school, but of course, the teachers are going to know exactly what they have to do. Maybe parents don't know how to keep, and not only keep, I don't want to say keep their child entertained, but maybe like they don't know how to, what activities they can do that maybe their children are going to enjoy. And we have that in the app. We have the spring season activities. So having that is just great. You can just go to your app and then check what activities both of you enjoy the most or your child enjoy the most. You can show them and say, hey, which one do you want to do today? You know? And like, let's say like a Saturday that you don't work, let's just do an activity from the Jour app and let's just enjoy it. It's a spring day. Spring is coming. Let's do it, you know? So it's very important to just spend that time with your children and just enjoy life. You know, every day passes by so quickly.
You're telling me my youngest is 19. I don't know how that happened. How my kids became so grown, but it went by so fast. You may not feel like it in the moment, but it did. And I think it's also important to note that, like, you know, financially, you don't have to spend a lot of money, you know, to spend time with your kids. I know that, you know, you're working, you're trying to do all these things, but you know, with my kids, we did a lot of Dollar Tree activities. We'd have sidewalk chalk and bubbles, and we would build forts. We would, you know, pop a tent into the living room and hang out in the living room in a tent, you know, so things that we could just do from home that were easy, that also didn't cost any money. You know, you spend $5, you have like a summer worth of activities right there.
And I'm sure that these are things that they remember and will remember forever.
These simple activities are more important, you know, in fact, compared to, let's say, giving them like a very expensive toy and then just give it out to them. Like, here you go. They're probably going to break it in 5 minutes or use it in 5 minutes and then will lose interest, really not gaining much out of it at all. So I think these simple things that you spoke about, you know, like having a chalk and kind of, you know, going outdoors with them, like the bubbles and all of that, it actually comes with goals. It will tell you exactly if you're doing this, this is what's going to help them in their sensory skill, maybe fine motor skills as you play a game of them popping the bubble. So these are more important when the parents know that an activity is leading to certain outcome and it has a goal attached to it and how many times they should be doing that in a day or a week. All of that kind of given to them in a packet kind of helps them exactly how to be the best parent they could be, you know?
Yeah, that's really amazing. I feel like we covered a lot of information and obviously this is going to have lots of links and things popping up so that everyone can find how to get all of this information. Is there anything that we didn't cover that we wanted to? I know my ADD brain sometimes ends up all over the place.
Well, no, I think that the last thing to mention, I don't know if Dr. Cherry wants to mention something else, but I think that something that I would mention is go follow us on Instagram. We have on Instagram as Jour.inc, and I'm pretty sure that Allison will be able to put that information in
absolutely
somewhere so that you guys will be able to see that. But we also post like many tips for parents and, you know, what are the benefits of the app, but not only the benefits of the app. Just tips for parents, and it's fun. It's just I love our little Instagram page. It's amazing. So just go check that out. And we also have our website, which is www.jour.com. You can always contact us, and we'll put all that information, give this to Allison, so you can just contact us, and we'll be more than happy to just help you with any concerns you might have.
Wow, yeah, that's amazing, Dr. Chattery. Did you have anything else that you wanted to add?
No, I just want to say thank you so much to you, Allison. You know, this kind of gives us an opportunity to share our experience. And thank you for sharing your experience. And I was really so glad to hear Anna talk to me or talk to us and everyone. You know, it's the first time I can feel like I am hearing. I hear you, Anna, you know, and this is exactly the purpose. So thank you so much.
Well, it's wonderful. Yeah. I'm so glad that y'all came on. And also with the app, I would love for people when they get the app to tag your Instagram as they do these activities. That would be really great.
Please. So I'll,
I'm also going to put some information about that in there, because I think that would be amazing to see people, you know, taking these activities through the spring and the summer and tagging the Instagram page. It'd be so fun to have that nice Jaguar community of parents showing, look at what I could do with this activity. It was so great. And you, I mean, come on, as parents, we love posting pictures of our children.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Allison, for having us over. It was amazing. I enjoyed a lot being in this podcast.
Me too. It's wonderful. And thank you all for coming on and talking about children's mental health and everything that you do. It's so important. And I really appreciate you both.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening.